This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back and join us once again on the highway to the Impact Zone. And yes, finally, we are specifically in the Impact Zone. No more pit stops to that damn asylum. So we're finally out of there. Tonight, we'll be covering three episodes of Impact. So from now on, we will be covering the episodes of Impact between each pay-per-view. If it's, you know, it's like four shows. We'll probably do like two and two, but there's nine episodes between here and Victory Road. So we're going to do three each episode for the next three episodes. So, but the episodes we're going to be covering are September 10th, 17th, and 24th episode of Impact. Now let me bring in my co-host and student and the guy who has a new lease on life after escaping the asylum, Jake Williams. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good, Logan. Now, one thing we'll have to keep track of is this going to be a don't know what you got till it's gone situation. Because as we're going to see, this transition into the only Impact era is going to be interesting. We're all going to see some production struggles. We'll say that as a little preview.
Yeah, we might say some taping issues, if you know what I mean.
We'll see. It may not be all, the grass is always greener. Let's just say that.
Yeah. It might not be true, but we'll have to figure it out, I guess. But now let us bring in our experts. Firstly, this guy saw how terrible our last two shows we covered were, so he dipped out and said, fuck it. Mr. Ben Locke, how you doing, Ben?
Hello, Logan. I better thank Matt for stepping in for me while he's still talking to me. December retail in December is pretty rough, mate. Don't do it if you don't have to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And secondly, he's my best pal, Lewis Maynard. How you doing, Lewis?
I'm doing great, and I definitely agree that we have a very, very long stretch here of production issues as they switch to just the Impact Zone. So we're going to have to work through that till we get going here.
Yeah, I got you. Lewis, I'll stick with you. The last two shows we covered, the last weekly pay-per-view and that episode of Impact right before it. What did you think of those shows we covered last time?
The regular episode was so-so. The pay-per-view, I liked aspects of it. I really liked the primetime and Chris Harris winning the tag belts. I thought that set up for a very interesting situation, which will continue on as we go through these episodes of Impact. So that was really cool. I liked Jarrett keeping the belt, even though we, of course, had Dusty get involved in the match. But right now, it wouldn't be prudent to put the belt on Jeff because Jeff just doesn't really deserve it. He really doesn't. So I'm glad it's stuck with Jarrett, and we get to see in these next few weeks some number one contenders try to push their way in. We'll see if that pays off. Knowing Dusty, it's not going to. But we'll see if some other contenders can rise up here.
I got you. And Ben, I'll shoot the same question to you, but I'll add on to it if you have any parting words for the asylum. So same question and then kind of your thoughts on leaving the asylum.
Okay. Impact was okay. It was meant to build to, quote unquote, the biggest pay-per-view of all time for TNA, the Date with Fate and all that bollocks. And frankly, it was a bit of a popcorn fart. You know, I think Lewis, you know, he was right what he said about the tag match. The tag match, the tag title match, I did like, but that the Jarrett Hardy match was awful. Sean and Matt and you guys did a great job laid into that. That was something beautiful. And yeah, I'm kind of with you with the whole Dusty and Scott D'Amore might be the worst match we've watched. I'm kind of there with you on that. As for the Asylum itself, I'll tell you what. And we, you know, I know we've got our production issues coming up later on this with the three shows we're watching today. You can never say that Asylum crowd were never enthusiastic. They loved TNA. And I did notice the fact that they were very careful never to mention lie to the crowd it was the last pay-per-view. Because I think they know they were going to get booed out of that. They were going to get booed and kicked out of that building for taking their TNA away from them. God damn it. I'm going to miss the crowd. I'm not necessarily going to miss the booking. Let's put it that way. I know we're going to carry on with a bit of it tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to kind of be out of there, but it might not get too bright of a future coming up here in these episodes, but hopefully it'll lead to something great in the future.
Absolutely.
After this, we'll go on into the Impact Zone, where we get a recap of the Date with Fate pay-per-view, which was the last weekly pay-per-view. Kind of just named the whole pay-per-view the Date with Fate. But Tanay then welcomes us, where he's standing in the ring with Don West. And as soon as he shoots over to Don West, I'm pretty sure he calls him Mark Tanay instead of Mike Tanay. So an early fuck-up for this first episode of Impact. But then Don recaps kind of everything that happened at the Date with Fate pay-per-view, the tag title match, the D'Amore Dusty stuff, the Jeff Hardy, Jeff Jarrett match. And then they kind of show highlights of all the matches, just kind of some of the cool moves and stuff that happened throughout them. And just, you know, kind of showed you the high points, if you want to call them that, during the show. And then they come back, and Tanay says that they'll get the we'll get to see the dream team of AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy in our first match tonight. So that leads to our first match, and it's AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy versus the Naturals. Douglas and Styles start things out. Styles gets a quick flurry of offense, but he finds himself in the corner where cheating and some double teams kind of ensue and give the Naturals the advantage. Naturals work over Storm for just a bit, and they go for the Natural Disaster, but Styles actually breaks out of it and hits the Pele on Douglas. He then tags Hardy in, who lays waste to the Naturals. Even though Stevens tried to fuck it up, AJ Styles still somehow flawlessly hit the little moonsault inverted DDT combo. And then AJ kind of levels Douglas with a brainbuster for Hardy to hit the Swanton for the win. Jake, what'd you think of this opener?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Just like a solid, like, 5-minute opening tag match. I thought the biggest highlight for me was just AJ. He looked like a stud in this match. I thought the match itself was very crisp. We've been kind of down on the Naturals, but I thought they were okay in this one. And maybe because the pace was so quick and they didn't really have to do any. I think their main weakness is being on offense for an extended amount of time. They didn't have to do that in this match, so I think that helped them. But they are definitely going down the card. Like, they're you know, it seems like they've kind of peaked. I guess they could come back, but definitely on the way down, because they don't completely like look like jobbers here, but they certainly look like they're being fed to AJ and Hardy, as who are like kind of two top guys. But as it was, I went 2 stars. It was solid for what it was, and I thought AJ looked spectacular in this match.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, I went 2.25 on it. Basically because I like 3 of the guys in the match. I think you can all probably guess who the 4th person is, though I don't like. AJ,
that's
yeah,
not AJ fair to
did
AJ.
Look like AJ looked like an absolute stud, an absolute champion this match. He had 2 slips that they kept on camera, which were quite noticeable. But even then, he still looked great. I think it was Jake who might have said it. I can't remember if it was in the last show or the one before that, where he said putting these two together is wrong because AJ looks so good and so fluid compared to Hardy's clunkiness. It's more and more obvious the more you see it, and it's definitely the case here. Hardy doesn't even get a tag until about 3 minutes into the match. The naturals also look good, but I'm with Jake. They're quite clearly, you know, going to be the heel jobber team for a while. They've had their 2 months of success. Yeah, like I said, went 2 stars on it. The segment before, if I could just talk about that for a second. I know it's his job anyway, but Don West really did just look like a used car salesman stood there next to Tanae. you could just see him waiting for you just to get to the counter. But yeah, good, fine match for what it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went a little higher. I went 2.5 stars just because I think the Naturals did some great heel work. Double teaming AJ, keeping him away from Jeff for a while. AJ did great, even though the moonsault reverse DDT had kind of slipped to it. Most of his stuff, as usual, is pretty flawless. Hardy wasn't great. He really phoned it in like he's been doing the whole time. But this was definitely just, okay, Naturals, you've had your spotlight now. Let's have 2 top guys beat you, and you just kind of fade back for a minute here. but yeah, it was pretty strong performance by AJ. It was pretty what we can expect from the Naturals at this point. They didn't do anything that ruined the match. So I went 2.5 stars on it.
Yeah, I got you. I went 2 on it. I thought AJ really showed out, like you guys have said. And the Naturals, like y'all said, they're definitely on their way down as it pertains to the tag division. But I thought they looked pretty good for how they've been a little bit lately. Hardy just kind of stumbled through this match like he kind of has been. So hopefully he'll kind of pick it up at some point. But I'm just not seeing it with him at in this run so far because he's just kind of stumbled through everything. So. But after this, we go back to Shane Douglas, and he's with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty says that miscommunication is the story surrounding him right now. Says Hardy and Jarrett were having one hell of a fight before things got out of hand, a.k.a. him and Russo running down to the ring. Says the return match will happen and the stakes will be upped, whatever that means. We then go to our next match, and it's Vordell Walker versus Monty Brown. Vordell Walker is great value supreme fighting machine, comma. just like with every other Monty squash, this is a complete destruction. Monty absolutely murders this guy. And we're going to introduce a new part of Monty matches. We're not going to give it star ratings per se, but we're going to rank the pounce. I gave this one 6 out of 10 on the pounce. Jake, what do you think of the pounce in this match?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll probably just go straight down the middle with a 5. It was kind of nothing. Sort of just your average baseline pounce, I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say. this one wasn't one of my favorites. This one wasn't one of my favorites, but yeah. Ben, what did you think of the pounce?
I go, it was a slightly more above average pounce for me. I went 6 out of 10 for that. I've got a couple of questions, though, gentlemen. I don't know if you noticed. Am I the only one who's noticed Shane Douglas with them scrunched up shoulders he does in an interview? Why does he do that?
He's like a big... He's such a ding-dong. He's just a goober, like...
Yeah, he's a creepiness individual.
He's like one of them weird little creatures in Labyrinth, just sort of all scrunched up. It's like, it just bugs me. And then Vordell Walker, first of all, that's going to be a name from the NXT name generator, surely, like 16 years early. And second of all, what was that roll into the ring he did? He was doing that thing that kids do when they keep rolling. It's just like, mate, you can stop now. But yeah, I went 6 for the pounce, and I went 1 star for the match as a whole because there was a lovely little double underhook suplex that Monty did before the pounce.
Yeah, that was a pretty sweet suplex he hit. Lewis, what'd you think?
I actually only went 4 out of 10 on the pounce. Walker didn't get any lift to him. He just sort of like went to the left and then straight down. So if you're not getting any lift on the pounce, it's not a good pounce, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, not one of my favorite pounces.
I feel like we're going to turn this into Olympic diving, you know what I mean?
We should.
Yeah, we're going to name it the Pounce-O-Meter. So, yeah, 6 out of 10 for me, and 5 and 4 for Lewis and Jake, and 6 for Ben on this one. So we need to get cards and do videos from now on. And hold them up.
That's going to be our new gimmick.
Absolutely. But after this, we come back from commercial and we get our next match, which is Mikey Betts and Jarrell Clark. And they're facing Michael Shane and Kazarian. Clark and Shane start things out. Clark gets kind of stuck in the corner of Kaz and Shane, and they take advantage by double teaming and kind of controlling him in their side of the ring. Shane and Kaz at one point do a giant swing into a drop kick. I thought that was a pretty cool double team move that they did. Clark then gets the tag to Batts after escaping an attack. Batts comes in hot, but double teaming by Kaz and Shane quickly squashes any momentum he had. Batts then gets thrown into Clark, and Clark gets hit with the Wave of the Future by Kaz. And then Kaz and Shane kind of hit the sweet and low chin music with a leg sweep combo for the win. That seems to be kind of their double team finisher. But Lewis, what'd you think of this match?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was no better, no worse than the last tag match. Again, Clark is just so much better than Batts in this tag team. I'm glad later on we do get to see Clark have a singles match where he can really shine. But for this, I kind of went the same route with the first tag match. I think it's only 2.5 stars because there was nothing that special in it. I don't know if I like Kaz and Shane's new finisher, the leg sweep super kick, because they had that. Weren't they doing like a leg drop backbreaker thing? Someone was doing something off the top rope in their past tag matches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were doing that, but
it wasn't necessarily their finisher. But yeah, they would.
Yeah, that's much better than this sweep super kick combo here. So that is what it is.
Gotcha, Ben. What'd you think of this one?
I went a bit lower than Lewis. I went 1.5 stars. So the reason I did is I didn't think the match was okay, but if we're comparing it to the first tag match, that was so much better thanks to AJ and the Naturals. I'm glad that you mentioned the King of Swing dropkick, because I did have that as my second place of my Great Value Award. Great Value Cesaro. Yeah. Great Value Cesaro with Tyson Kidd there. My other issue was the fact that we saw on the pay-per-view this X Division quote-unquote dominance match, and the people who won that match have just lost a match in 2.5 minutes. They ain't very dominant, are they?
Yeah, I was kind of feeling that throughout that match, because I was just like, didn't they just beat them like somewhat convincingly on the pay-per-view? So,
I did like the fire that Kaz and Shane showed, but the match itself wasn't that great.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went 1.5 stars on it. To me, it was like maybe a step above like a squash match, because they pretty much dominated. Kaz and Shane pretty much dominated definitely the early part. I agree with Ben. The swing was kind of great value in that. I like the concept, but I didn't think he got like a full rotation. I think he did like 3/4 of a circle. And then they kind of ended it. Yeah, it was like slow motion 3/4 of a rotation. So not the greatest. But the most baffling thing for me was just, like you guys mentioned, the booking of it. Like, you have them get this, like, you know, big underdog win, only for them to just pretty much get creamed the next show. It just doesn't really make much sense. Like, what was the point of it then? Like, what were you trying to accomplish with that, besides maybe, I guess, having a moment on that show? But it doesn't seem like they have any plans to build on it. So, just kind of odd.
Yeah, not the worst booking decision of a tag team we'll see, even in this one episode. But we'll get to that later on. but I went 1.5. I'm kind of with y'all guys. It wasn't fantastic, but I thought Kaz and Shane looked pretty good in this one for what it was worth. But after this, we go back to Shane Douglas, and he's with Vince Russo this time. Douglas asks if Hardy is getting the title shot like Dusty wants. Russo said, why doesn't Dusty give him what he wants and leave and let him run TNA without any interruption? He blames Dusty for losing. Then he says he'll look at all the competitors in TNA and even outside TNA and is going to find the best he can to be the next challenger to Jeff Jarrett in his NWA world title. After this, though, we go back to our next match, and it's Abyss versus Brian O. I've said this a few times through the podcast so far, but this is like the worst offense of them going to Universal Studios and just pulling a park visitor out, asking him if he wants to wrestle. This is the worst one of these so far. So, and I also wonder if he's Barry O's son. He was a jobber back in WWF back in the 80s. So Brian O, son of Barry O. And then the only other note I have on this match is Abyss absolutely mauls this guy and just absolutely destroys him. So I gave it 1 star for a squash like I usually would. But Ben, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, 1 star as well. Fabulous black hole slam again for my boy Abyss. But it got to the point where I was noticing the Fox box and they had a lovely caption at the bottom that said September 15th to 4-0-4. It was like, guys, are you not even watching your own thing, your own production to get your dates right? You've got one job. I feel as well, Logan, we might need to, as well as a pounceometer, we might need an outside-ometer for the next few weeks.
Yeah, we could install that for sure. So we have one so far, right?
One so far.
Yeah, I gotcha. But Lewis, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, it's hard to even give this a 1 star. It was just not good. At one point, Brian O attempted to duck a clothesline and like completely ducked it, but then decided to, after the fact, sell that he got hit. So he did this weird like stumbling back fall thing, and Abyss just looked at him like, "What the fuck are you doing, dude?" So it's hard to even give it a 1 star. I went with Brian O is a great value acolyte Bradshaw because he has the short black hair and goatee and kind of even looks like a very out of shape JBL if JBL was a foot shorter. And then he was wearing these like Eddie Guerrero Latino Heat pants too. So it was really weird combination of looks there.
Yeah, I was in those pants were something else. But yeah, he was very pudgy and very pale. So, giving me some Vince Russo vibes from a couple weeks ago when he went shirtless. Jake, what do you think?
Let me do my job. Sorry, that was my Russo on it. I feel like he says that every time he gets the mic. Just let me do my job, Dusty. That's all he says. But I also like Logan. I like that he would be Barry O's son because that would make him, I think, that Randy Orton would be his cousin and Cowboy Bob would be his uncle. And so this guy being in any way from the same genetics as Randy Orton would be pretty amazing considering what he looks like and his talent level. Yeah, like Lewis said, they seem to just struggle even with these jobber guys to even get guys to look like they have any idea what they're doing. Because we've seen them with some pretty like sorry jobbers, and we're going to see a few more throughout this little stretch. But yeah, he was kind of rough, but it was just it was what you should expect. I went half a star on it just because even as a jobber, he was kind of sloppy. And we get our first, I don't know if it was the first one, but the first one I noted of on commentary, they talk about going outside of TNA, which will be start a just a litany of us getting berated with them saying outsider and outside for what seems like 14 times a show. So,
ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Congratulations, TNA. You're as subtle as a brick.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way this guy had ever wrestled before in his life.
No. I would like to point out that Don West let us know he is an 8-year veteran, this Brian.
It's true.
He did say that, yeah.
8 years in the business. Can't duck a clothesline.
Was that insane?
Well, he is Randy Orton's cousin, so I mean, yeah.
In your backyard wrestling professional.
Can he do a really good chin lock though? That's the question.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see him come back. But we'll go on to Ben's favorite segment of the episode. We're going to get 6 points of impact with Jeff Hammond, a.k.a. Mark Harmon. He's going to tell us all the reasons that Jeff Jarrett won at the last pay-per-view. The number one thing was he established his territory. Number two was he had the experience edge. Number three was Jeff Hardy underestimated Jeff Jarrett, which I don't think is true at all. Number four is heart and endurance. So you're really putting over your top heel by saying he's very babyface like with his heart and endurance. Number five is the Rhodes Russo factor. And the last one is that he won at any cost. So he was willing to do whatever it took to win. Ben, what'd you think of this segment?
I'll keep it short, but not necessarily sweet. This was the worst one to date, and two reasons why. One, because it was Jeff on his own. He was basically a charisma vacuum. And two, when you can see the guy literally looking down at his cue cards to say what he's going to say next, we've got a little bit of an issue there, haven't we, Logan? This was shit, and that's all I'm going to say.
I won't say it was the worst, but it was one of the worst for sure. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, this is completely useless because all the things he talks about, none of them matter, played any factor in the match. Like, and there's nothing, if you watch the match, to make you think that anything, these things, like, I think at one point, one of his is that there was interference. It's like, no, it should be 1 point of impact because that was the reason, like, he won. So it's like, there's no, all the other ones are just some shit y'all made up to make it sound like this match had, like, any kind of storytelling or anything going on. So, yeah, just, and like Ben said, we said that, you know, this segment lives and dies by who he's interviewing because he definitely doesn't bring anything to the table. So with him by himself, it's just dead in the water, no matter what he was talking about. And then he made stupid points, so that didn't help.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, this one was pretty freaking useless. Luckily, this is the only 6 points of impact we'll talk about tonight. He's on assignment for the other two episodes, so.
Meaning I have fulfilled my contractual obligations. I'm not doing this shit anymore.
Absolutely. Up next, Jarrett comes out to cut a promo, and I made the note of what the fuck is the necklace that Jarrett has on. Dusty has worn a black...
He was...
Go ahead.
He was right off the beach of Panama City with this. He looked ridiculous.
What it looked like to me is Dusty's been wearing a black shirt in his matches lately, and they had these big gold buttons, or big silver buttons on them. It looked like that, but it was on a string around Jarrett's neck. That's what it looked like to me. But he asks where his credit is at, and everyone doubted him. Says he'll take on anyone, even those outside the organization, maybe even some outsiders. He says something about Vince bringing in some outsiders, or has he already beat him to the punch? So he mentions outsiders about four or five times in this promo, so that's up to about six on our outsider meter. But Jake, what'd you think of this promo by Jarrett?
Yeah, it was kind of like the beginning. Well, the first part, like you, Logan, I was really just taken aback by his whole outfit with the necklace and his giant khaki cargo pants. And yeah, he looked like he rolled off the beach. Yeah, it's just like his normal, like, blasting everybody, saying they don't respect him, he's the king of the mountain, blah, 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 and then challenging everybody. I did note at one point he says, like, I want challenges from Japan, from Mexico. And he's like, from Puerto Rico. So I guess he wants to face like Carlos
Carlito.
Yeah. So that was kind of
he wants a Caribbean legend.
Well, he is a youngster.
Savio. I would really pop if they brought back Savio to face Jeff Jarrett. But yeah, it was the main thing is just, I don't know. It's like, I don't really know what the point of the promo was. It was just kind of him, I guess, putting himself over after he wanted the pay-per-view. And then say outsiders, to put that in our head again, but it was your typical Double J deal.
Yeah, it was pretty pointless, like most of his promos, but Ben, what'd you think of this Outsiders promo?
Outsiders. What could he mean? Oh. Well, that's a mystery that's going to keep me on tenterhooks. If we did the fashion statement on this show, Logan, I think we would have a very clear winner. Just his typical standard Jeff Jarrett promo. All we needed was a slap nuts and as many King of the Mountain references as we could get in.
Absolutely. Lewis, what'd you think of this promo?
Yeah, King of Margaritaville, Jeff Jarrett was on on point tonight for sure.
Absolutely. There is a Margaritaville restaurant at the City Walk at Universal Studios, so he actually could have gone there.
Of course there is.
It's probably
I get the feeling quite a few people go there.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Savio Vega. I'm pretty sure he's on the Spanish announce team tonight. I don't remember if it was this episode of Impact or another one, but Don Westbrook today at one point say Savio Vega is filling in on the Spanish announce team.
Yeah, I remember them saying that actually.
It's this episode because I made the note that they had to bleep Vega out because obviously they couldn't say his name properly.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I definitely heard them say that. I didn't read too much into it, but I guess they really did have him. I think he actually pointed towards the Spanish announce team when he said Puerto Rico too. So that maybe that was a shot, Savio. No, I'm being dead serious. He really did point over.
Oh, no.
our main event for this episode is next, and it's Team Canada, comprised of Johnny Devine and Bobby Roode. And they're taking on the new tag champs of Elix Skipper and Chris Harris. Team Canada jumps the champs at the bell. Once things kind of settle down, Devine and Skipper start things in the ring. The champs at one point hit a stalling suplex kind of crossbody combo that I thought was pretty cool looking. Then they were kind of controlling Devine until the stupid ref got distracted by Harris, who wasn't even doing anything. He just started paying attention to Harris for some unknown reason. And this kind of allows Roode to get into the match without tagging in. I made the note that Roode's tights are super cheap looking in this. They have like, they look like a middle school little kids baseball team. Just made jerseys themselves. They have Team Canada plastered across the back and like a cheap looking maple leaf on the front. But Devine then hints the Devine intervention moonsault, but he only gets two on that because Harris comes in and breaks up the pin. Harris then is able to get a tag and comes in wrecking everyone in sight. The champs then go for the heart attack maneuver to end the match, but Damore actually gets the hockey stick into Harris's back. Skipper then dives out on top of Damore, but Roode comes in and crushes Harris with a lariat, and Devine covers for the win. And I'll just go into what happens after the match. We end the episode with a in-ring brawl with 3LK, the Naturals, Team Canada, AMW, Triple X, so pretty much the whole tag division. And then we kind of get a highlight package of all of TNA's history to that point. But Jake, what'd you think of the main event here?
Yeah, I thought the match itself was pretty good. Just a good match. I thought Skipper looked a little more crisp than he usually does. We've kind of talked about a lot how sometimes he's a little disappointing because he's super athletic, but some of the stuff looks pretty sloppy. And I thought he looked pretty good here. Yeah, and I thought this is one of the better Damore interference spots that they've done because they at least, like you said, the ref stuff is really stupid, but the way he did it, I like how it was kind of sneaky, like he waited for him to come off the ropes and then hit him in the back, like not as obvious as his other ones were and as telegraphed, like where he usually just jumps on the apron and hits somebody or something. I thought it was at least like kind of creative or fluid. But the thing is, like, they never mentioned one time about Primetime and Harris being like the whole storyline that's going on with them, which to me was just baffling coming off that show. I feel like you need to be mentioning this on commentary because it makes me think, like, you just are you dropping that, which they're not. They're gonna, it's gonna be an angle, but why? It's just weird to have them in the ring and not at least mention it, you know, or it really should be the main topic that they're talking about, because if you want to build the angle off of it, I just thought that was extremely weird that they would just kind of no sell the angle that they just set up on the pay-per-view. But as a match, I went 2.25, but yeah, that part of it storyline wise was baffling to me.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I went 2.25 as well. The match itself was fine, but it was very paint by numbers. I'm glad you mentioned the crossbody off the suplex, though, because I thought that was really good. And the divine intervention was excellent as well. I'm with Jake on the Damore interference. The only problem is, though, the fact that we've seen it week. It means that we know what's coming, and it was just like, oh, this again. You know, it was one of those. So, yeah, it was one of the better ones, but I don't need to... And the same with the post-match brawl with the ring bell continually ringing. That feels like the end of Impact every week has that in it. As for the promo video at the end, which I know you mentioned, am I the only one who thought that would be a really good thing to have on the first episode of Impact? Because even Tanay mentioned during the tag match something about, you know, this is for new fans who, you know, haven't been watching the product. Well, that's what you should have done right from the beginning, surely.
They had something similar with some kind of flashbacks to past TNA weekly pay-per-view stuff. But the one tonight was definitely more detailed. And, I mean, I guess they're showing it as a transition from the asylum here, yeah. I guess.
Don't get me wrong, it was a good video, but it was something they should have done like 2-3 months earlier. That's my issue.
It was a lot more detailed than what they showed at the beginning of the Impact shows.
Absolutely, because they were just hoping and guessing that people knew who you're on about.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the first episode of Impact, I'm pretty sure they just showed like 3 highlights of certain moments, and they were all like celebrity appearances. So it was like not really putting over the talent; it was putting over like how big they were, because they got Brian Urlacher and Toby Keith and all those cool guys. but Lewis, what'd you think of this main event?
I also went 2.25 with it. I thought it was okay. The match was okay. The booking in the match, I thought was insane to have Skipper and Harris lose it when they just won the tag titles. And it's the second time they've done this, because after the Naturals won the titles, didn't they lose to Bats and Clark like on the next Impact?
I don't know if my memory serves me correctly. They lost at some point. I don't know if it was
I don't know how I feel about tag champs just losing meaningless tag matches. And I get that it's Team Canada and you have Scott D'Amore and they always win this way, but Harris and Skipper just won the tag titles. Maybe let them look a little stronger. And Scott D'Amore is yelling on the outside that they're number one contenders now, which we will see going forward. They're not the number one contenders after this match, which is another weird thing about it. They just pinned the tag champs. Theoretically, yeah, they should be number one contenders, but we'll see how that plays out in the next couple weeks here.
Yeah, I was going to say that. No, go ahead.
I was going to say Russo. It's going to be Russo booking at its finest, isn't it?
Absolutely. That was kind of what I was alluding to earlier. They just won the tag titles. Team Canada is pretty bulletproof. I mean, they've lost a bunch and won a bunch. So, I mean, they're not really trying to build Team Canada as this unstoppable force. So, I mean, they could take the loss to the new tag team champions because they, like Jake said, they didn't even really play up the, kind of feud that Harris and Skipper had against each other. So, like, they didn't play up that they had a lot of problems as a team or anything like that. So the fact that they lost despite that, I mean, if it had kind of come down to them turning on each other and that caused them to lose, I would maybe get it a little bit, but that didn't even really come into play, and they lost fairly, I mean, it wasn't clean, but fairly cleanly as it goes. But yeah, just a weird booking decision. But you know, when Russo's at the helm, it's kind of crazy. But I'll stick with Lewis. What'd you score this episode of Impact, and what are your thoughts on it?
I gave it like a 3 or 4 out of 10. It really wasn't anything special, especially like that. This is your first, okay, we're done with the weekly pay-per-views, so we're going to make sure our weekly television shows are top-notch, and this wasn't that. If you're going to go away from the weekly pay-per-views and have these weekly episodes leading up to pay-per-views from now on, you need to make them so much better than they've been, and this was just not.
Yeah, I gotcha. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was real meh. It just seemed really unfocused. Like, I feel like very little got built, or they didn't build off of what they did at the pay-per-view. The closest thing you got to anything was Jarrett talking about, talking about the outsider or whatever. But other than that, you don't really get, like Lewis said, it's just a really kind of stumbling out of the gate if you're trying to call this like a new era of TNA. And so I went 4 out of 10 on it. There really wasn't anything like awful on it except for the 6 points thing. But they're really, it just felt very forgettable and kind of meaningless.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
I went 4 out of 10 as well, because there were a couple of really decent tag matches in there. And, you know, you got the Monty and the Biff squashes as well. So that made me a happy boy. I think the issue they've got is they've got these 3 pay-per-views left to burn off, haven't they? So they're still trying to get people to watch them, and they don't want to build anything properly to Victory Road. And like you mentioned at the beginning of the pod, Logan, we've got 9 weeks. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we're in this holding pattern until we burn through those pay-per-views, and then we can focus all the efforts onto the Victory Road pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think they kind of almost left themselves in too much of a gap between the last weekly and this first monthly pay-per-view, because they got a lot of time to burn, and you know, they really have to stretch out this number one contender for Jarrett's title storyline. So
they could definitely have like kept a few storylines going for until the end of September easily. They didn't need to burn them all through for September 8th.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I went 4 out of 10 as well. Not one of the worst episodes we've watched. It had a couple of solid matches, and it's always fun to watch Monty and Abyss squash some bitches. So, yeah, 4 out of 10, kind of a little bit below middle of the road. But since our second episode's going to be kind of a short one, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back on the other side with our second and third episode for this week. See you on the other side. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the second half of our show, where we will be discussing the September 17th and September 24th episodes of Impact. With this next episode of Impact, we've kind of deduced that the hurricane that they mentioned about 2 weeks ago kind of messed with the taping of this episode. So we actually get three or four repeat matches. But we kind of open with the announcement that tonight will feature a lot of the X Division, and Jarrett will have a match as well. And then we kind of get that highlight package of TNA's history once again. And then the announcement that the Victory Road pay-per-view will be on November 7th. The opening contest is Team Canada versus Team AAA. If you want to hear about this match, go back to our third episode. we'll hear all about it. Team Canada scores the win. But then we move on to our next match, which had been a dark match on a previous episode, but we haven't talked about it yet, so we'll talk about this one. Kid Cash and Dallas take on Amazing Red and Chris Sabin. Cash kind of stalls early, kind of bitching at the fans, playing up his major heel character. Cash and Red then kind of lock up training arm bars early. We go to commercial. We go to commercial during the match, and when we come back, Red is on top of Kid Cash, kind of kicking him in the gut and kicking his ass. Tags in Sabin, who comes in and continues to kind of work over Cash. Cash reverses an Irish whip and nails a clothesline and tags in Dallas. Dallas comes in and hits an absolutely brutal sidewalk slam. Cash then gets tagged back in and hits an impressive moonsault. Dallas comes back in and continues the beatdown. Sabin is eventually able to grab, get his boot up in the corner and follow it up with kind of a crazy tornado DDT. Both men then get the tag, and Red comes in, taking it to Cash. Red goes for the Code Red, but is completely botched, so it basically ends up just being kind of like a regular sunset flip. But Dallas comes in and breaks it up. All four men then get in the ring and brawl, and a brawl breaks out, and it all ends with Dallas hitting a big boot on Red, and then Cash hits a frog splash for the win. Jake, what'd you think of this tag match?
Yeah, it was all right. You know, knowing now that, like, after watching it and figuring out it was a dark match, it kind of makes sense. It's kind of what it felt like. Like, I went 2 stars on it. I thought Red had really good energy in this match. Cash and Dallas are pretty decent as a team because Cash can kind of do most of the work and Dallas just comes in and hits a few power spots. At first, I was kind of like, well, what are they doing with Red and Sabin? And then I realized, well, I guess nobody was supposed to ever see this. So I guess you can't take it too, like, you know, seriously as far as the booking. But they are two guys that they put together a decent amount, but never really commit to them as a tag team. And I feel like we say this every show, but they're like two of the more talented guys, especially in the X Division that you see. So it's just their use continues to be kind of confusing. You never really know what they're up to, and they never really seem to be in like featured spots. They're kind of just utility guys, but they put them over a lot. So I don't know, but it was an okay match. It was 2 stars. It was perfectly decent, if not spectacular.
Gotcha. I'll mention this now before I go to the other guys, but the commentary on this episode is done in post-production, so you can tell that, like, Mike and Don are, like, in a car somewhere just driving down the road commentating on this episode. So the commentary is pretty bad on this one. But, Ben, what did you think of this match?
A couple of things. Can I just go back to the Team Canada match, if possible? Might be, and you could tell, like you just said, that they are clearly distracted and not paying much attention because they don't even mention anybody from Team Mexico until 4 minutes into the match, and it's a 5 minute and it's a 5 minute match. We don't even get anything down the entrance ramp by, like, oh, by the way, this is Mr. Aguilar and whoever. No, none of that. We don't bother. As for this match, yeah, it was all right. I went 1.75 stars on it. I'm with Jake, though. Like, can we just rescue Chris Sabin out of whatever booking purgatory he's in and at least try and make him a contender again? My final note, the Code Red botch was spectacular, but It was good if you wanted to know the mechanics of the move. So, you know, if you wanted to show it at wrestling school, hey, there you go.
Yeah, I gotcha. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, speaking of wrestling school, knowing that this was a dark match, it kind of figures that this was more of a test for Dallas-type dark match. So I guess that's where they were going with, like, what Saban and Red were supposed to be doing here. It wasn't the worst tag match we've seen in TNA, but it's clearly a dark match to me as I'm watching it. Just it does not feel like this was something that anyone in the ring was putting their full heart into, and it's just a filler spot to be like, okay, we have an episode of TNA to fill because of the hurricane. Let's just what do we got sitting around? Oh, a tag match. Let's throw it in. There's nothing special.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm with Jake. I went 2 on it. I thought this was a pretty good showcase for Dallas for what it was worth. I kind of agree with Lewis. You can kind of tell this match wasn't made for TV necessarily, but kind of was a showcase to kind of try and test him and see if he was kind of worth putting some push behind. But Kid Cash hit a pretty awesome frog splash at the end. That's one of my favorite moves, so I always like seeing people pulling that one out.
Yeah, considering the Kid Cash push after this dark match, you can tell how the Dallas scored on this test run.
Oh yeah, and when he hit the big boot at the end of this match, the great value test in Dallas came out even more. So,
oh, test is already great value. So.
Yeah, absolutely. But we move on from here, and we get a Monty Brown package, and we actually get a highlight of when he made Jeff Hammond say pounce when he said, "Yeah, the pounce." I knew Ben wanted me to mention
pounce.
The pounce.
Pounce.
But yeah, it's just him hitting a bunch of pounces and then him saying it over and over again. So, solid little Monty package. And then we kind of get highlights, if you want to call them that, from the world title match from the last weekly pay-per-view. The next match is a squash match that features Jeff Jarrett and Lex Lovett. This one, I can't tell you what episode we talked about it on, but this is another repeat match.
July 30th, so this match is nearly 2 months old.
Yeah, so, okay. So this is on the July 30th episode, whenever we covered that one.
It was at this point where I realized that something was afoot with this show, because the match starts with the Elite Guard coming out, who we haven't seen for 2 months.
Yeah, I was saying the Elite Guard making an appearance. That's when I kind of knew something was screwed up or something was a little bit wrong. After that, we get a package for Petey showing kind of his X Division title reign, and then kind of the fact that AJ says he's coming back to the X Division to go for the title. But then we go on to our main event for the evening, and it's Alex Shelley and AJ Styles, and this is significant because it is Goldilocks' last appearance with the company, so we're going to lose our dear Goldilocks forever after this one. But they lock up early and kind of trade some submissions. Styles hits some awesome steamboat-like arm drags and follows it with a pretty phenomenal drop kick. Goldie provides a little bit of a distraction, which allows Shelley to take over. He hits a pretty brutal knee charge into the corner. Styles then is able to avoid a top rope attack and hit a vicious release German. He just completely throws Shelley across the ring. It's pretty awesome. And then after this, he hits a pretty brutal tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. And he follows it with his trademark inverted DDT from the moonsault. Styles then goes for the clash, but Shelley reverses it into a fisherman swinging neckbreaker, but he only gets 2 on that. And then Styles kind of uses a quick reversal to get a roll-up win. And he scores the victory with a roll up. Jake, what do you think of this main event?
Yeah, this was good stuff. Definitely the best Shelley has looked to be since we've seen him debut. I felt like he stepped his game up, and AJ kind of brought the best out of him. They just had really good intensity and kind of back and forth. There were some really cool counters throughout the whole thing. And definitely, I like the way that they established sort of the story of the match was that everything Shelley was doing at first, AJ had an answer for it. And so he had to kind of go into another, like he had to kind of step his game up to even have a chance against AJ, even though he didn't lose. To me, it's like a good example of, you know, a guy losing and I think looking better for it. I think I was more impressed with him than I have been so far. It was at one point today said that Shelley uses a European style, which I thought was interesting. I never really thought of him as a guy who worked a European style, which I guess could be true. I'd have to, I guess, think about his moves and stuff, but I thought it was kind of random. But yeah, it was good stuff for like a 6-minute match on a show that was clearly just them feeling time. I mean, good for them for digging this up, because they certainly could have put it on a different Impact considering the stuff we've seen thrown out Impact. So I went a 2 3/4 on it. Good stuff.
Yeah, I got you. Ben, what'd you think?
First of all, gentlemen, can we please have a moment of silence for the end of Goldilocks? Thank you. no, I'm with Jake. I thought this was really good. I think I've said it before on this podcast, and I'll repeat it. AJ Styles has the best dropkick I have ever seen in wrestling. That was absolutely tremendous. I'm so glad that you mentioned the German suplex as well, because that was vicious. That was absolutely vicious. Yeah, and I'll agree with what Jake said. Shelley looked far better in defeat than he has in many of his victories. I also went 2 3/4 on it.
Gotcha. Lewis, what'd you think?
I actually went all the way up to 3 stars for it for a couple of reasons. One, like you were talking about, Jake, that European style, that's something they've mentioned before that Shelley does have, and we actually got to see it a lot more in this match. I think because AJ's somebody that can make that type of style of wrestling for a TNA audience look interesting. So Shelley was able to showcase a lot more. Again, this being a dark match and letting Shelley show this much was pretty interesting for them not putting it just on regular TV. And AJ just winning with the roll-up and not like a Styles Clash or anything more forceful was another thing that just let Shelley kind of shine more, that AJ Styles just beat him with a simple roll-up and not something better. So I think this shouldn't have been a dark match. This definitely should have been on air at some point already. So that's why I went ahead and bumped it up to 3 stars.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm going to go 2 3/4 with the other two guys. It's definitely a match that I think should have been featured on TV. I guess it just might not have fit somewhere in I don't know. Maybe it didn't fit in the booking for certain weeks at certain points, but I don't really know why this one wasn't actually on an episode of Impact before this. But I'm kind of glad we get to see it, because it's kind of a little hidden match that you might not have seen coming. But yeah, Styles really, really performed well, and I think Shelley stepped up his game to kind of get to a little bit on Styles' level. So hopefully Shelley will kind of stick to the X Division at this point and kind of be a featured player there, because I think he's really talented, and I hope he's kind of more featured like some of the other guys that we've made a lot of comments about. That's the main event for this week. So like I said, it was going to be a pretty quick episode, because a lot of it was repeats, and most of it was just packages in the middle. But Lewis, what do you think of the two matches we watched, and what would you score the show out of 10?
Understanding the circumstances around it and why they were doing these dark matches repeats because of the hurricane, I'd go somewhere probably around 3 stars, 4 stars, because the dark matches that they pulled out and showed us were okay. The Shelley Styles match, definitely the shining point and probably one of the better matches we see throughout this episode of the podcast. So I'll go 3.5 out of 10 on it. Gotcha. Just because it wasn't a real Impact show.
Yeah, I got you. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went 3 out of 10 because even though the main event I thought was good, we just, you know, it's pretty much them mailing it in. And whether they were justified or not, it is what it is. And it's just not a very good show. It's just, it is the definition of filler. I would say like a good 1/4 of it too was just video packages. Honestly, I felt like after single match, there was like a lengthy package. They were clearly just trying to kill time on this one. And so for that, even though we did get the good match, it's hard for me to go anywhere over 3 because it just seemed like a non-episode. And just even the audio, like it was just, the audio was bad on it. Yeah, just not a... Just kind of a weird episode.
Yeah. Ben, what did you think?
I went 2.5 out of 10 on it. But in a weird way, I almost feel like it's very unfair to rate this against the other impacts. It's kind of what we've got to do. And it's not their fault necessarily. They've done the best of what they can out of what was a very bad situation. But like Jake says, you know, They fill the time with, let's be blunt, 4 matches, 2 of which were repeats, and about 10-15 minutes worth of video packages. It is what it is.
Yeah, I was going to say, this one clocked in at, I think when I was watching it, at 40 minutes. And most of the episodes of Impact so far have been like 48 to 50 minutes. So this one was much shorter than usual. And like the guys have said, there was a lengthy video package between each match. So, it really stood out that,
There was going to be a lengthy video package at the end. I was going to say it was meant to be a lengthy video package at the end, but for whatever reason, they cut that out as well.
Yeah. I'm guessing so. I'm guessing they somewhat ran out of time or something like that, but, I guess they could have thrown it together a little bit better, but, I'd probably go 3 out of 10 just because the 2 matches that were new were pretty solid and the main event was even actually really pretty good.
But
3 out of 10 is about the peak that this one was going to get because, you know, they didn't even pick one of the better squash matches. They just picked one of Jarrett's squash matches to kind of get him on the show. definitely not their best showing, but I guess under the circumstances, they did the best they could.
If we got that main event on any other episode of Impact, we'd all be pretty damn happy, I think. So,
yep. Oh yeah,
that deserves some credit. But at the same time, you've got to penalize them for the other 35 minutes of fluff.
Yeah, absolutely. What were you gonna say, Jake?
Oh no, I was just saying that. That I would definitely be satisfied if that were a main event on a non cobbled together Impact.
Yeah, absolutely. But we'll move straight on from there to the third episode for tonight, which is the September 24th episode of Impact. We open this episode with kind of them trying to decide who should get the title shot, followed by a pretty cool video package kind of highlighting the Impact Zone and all the big stars in the promotion and 3LK. But after this, Larry Zbyszko's shown coming out to the ring, and he's followed by Triple X and AMW. Larry Zbyszko is wearing a shirt that appears to have Yu-Gi-Oh cards on them. I don't know if y'all are big Yu-Gi-Oh fans back in the day, but that's what it looked like.
Back in the day. Yu-Gi-Oh fan now, man. I always believe in the heart of the cards.
And he's proud of it too, goddammit.
Damn straight.
But that's what it looked like to me. But he says Russo isn't there tonight. He's in a big meeting trying to figure out who the number one contender is going to be for the world title at the pay-per-view. And then he also says that Dusty is unfortunately actually here in the Impact Zone tonight. But he said he won't let him ruin the show tonight. I don't think Larry can accomplish that, but we'll see. But he also kind of announces that we're going to get a tag title match between the champs of Skipper and Harris versus their respective partners. So Storm and Daniels are going to get a tag title shot here tonight. What did y'all think of this kind of opening part with Zbyszko? Jake, what'd you think?
I thought this was pretty okay. I'm glad that they're acknowledging it. I did pop as always whenever Skipper got the mic and he goes, "All right, Larry," which that kind of got me. But I'm glad they're finally acknowledged, even though it is weird. This whole sequence episode, it would be interesting to have like some behind the scenes knowledge or something to know like what was going on here, because you know obviously they didn't drop the angle because they come in hot with it on this episode. It's like the first thing they acknowledge. So why did they just like not even talk about it on the other one? It's just very strange, but I'm glad they're acknowledging it. Now I'm interested to see what they're going to do with it, because we kind of questioned it on the pay-per-view, like what was the point of all this? And I think it can be an interesting angle, but I'm not really sure where you go with it. So it all depends on where they go with it, I guess. But it was an okay segment. It's at least some kind of angle, you know, at least they're giving us some kind of build to something to look forward to, and not just random matches.
Yeah, I gotcha. Ben, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty decent, to be fair, because it was one of those situations where, you know, Zbyszko didn't admit to what, you know, AMW and Triple X were asking of him backstage, but we got to fill the gaps in ourselves, which, you know, Russo doesn't do very often like that. It like Jake says, though, they do seem to be going down a bit of a cul-de-sac with this angle. Yeah, let's get the two mismatch partners against the other two mismatch partners, and if the new mismatch partners win, they win the title as well, and then we're back to square one. Great. And I also like this promo sort of did confirm the fact that basically Zbyszko is a Russo bootleg, which, you know, we kind of already had guessed, but this pretty much confirmed it.
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis, what'd you think of the Yu-Gi-Oh shirt Larry was wearing?
Always love the Yu-Gi-Oh shirts, man. I will say my favorite thing Larry said was, "Unfortunately, Dusty Rhodes is here tonight," which I 100% agree with. The segment itself, I wish there would have been a little more awkwardness between the two teams. Like Harris and Storm seem to be on the same page about wanting the titles for them. Skipper and Daniels seem to be on the same page about wanting the titles for them. I wish there would have been more of like an interesting kind of something from Skipper or Harris, like, "Well, I have the belt. I don't want to really have the chance to lose it to Skipper and Daniels now that I have it." Like, so just some kind of awkwardness where like the team that has the belts isn't pissed that they have the belts. Like, why? That's the weird thing to me. Like, have something showing that, okay, it's not just cut and dry that these guys want to be with their old partners now that since they currently have championships.
Yeah, that's a good point, because they have built their own commentary too. Like on commentary, that's how they're trying to like get the story over. It's like, what's more important to you, having the championship or loyalty to your partner? Which, to your point, Lewis, they haven't really. They've both been pretty straight up. Like, I'm loyal to my tag team partner, so it really kind of squashes the tension.
Yeah, we'll get some awkwardness later for sure, but it could have been cool to tease it a little here.
Yeah, absolutely. Just trying to, you know, protect your championship, even though you might not have the partner that you want, but you know, you are still the champion at the same time. Like, so I totally get it.
At the end of the day, a belt's a belt.
Yeah, I get where you're all coming from for sure. But our opening contest for this episode of Impact is the X Division champion Petey Williams, and he's taking on Jarrell Clark. The two lock up to start, and after quick trading of moves, Clark hits an arm drag as well as a drop kick. Petey then goes to the outside to stall and kind of confer with his team. Clark kind of continues the offense when Petey comes back in until D'Amore trips him with the hockey stick, leading to an inverted DDT by Petey. We go to commercial at this point and come back, and Petey kind of has Clark in a chin lock. Petey then takes Clark. he takes Clark to Suplex City. He hits him with kind of a back suplex and a German suplex. So he inspired a Brock Lesnar that I think was in Japan at this point. So, after this, Petey goes back to the. Oh, yeah. Yeah. D'Lo had passed off some of his knowledge. Petey then goes back to the chin lock, but Clark eventually breaks out and hits kind of a flurry of heavy strikes. And then more Team Canada distraction kind of leads to Petey hitting a kind of a tilt-a-whirl Russian leg sweep kind of move, and then he hits the Canadian destroyer for the win. Jake, what'd you think of this opener?
Yeah, I thought this was pretty good. Petey's always really good. And Jarrell Clark has kind of been somebody that we've seen and kind of were impressed with given his role. And I thought he looked really good in this. I thought this was a really well done match in that Petey gets a win, just a good solid title defense. But Clark looked kind of scrappy in it and tough. So he kind of looks a little bit better too. So I think it's like one of those well done match in that both guys, I think, gained something from it, which is ideally what you want. And as far as the match, it was pretty good too. I mean, it wasn't given a ton of time, but it was fun for what it was. I really like Petey, and I wish you would see him more in this, where he's not just thrown in with Team Canada, where he can kind of do his own thing. But I went 2 stars on it. I thought both guys looked real good.
Yeah, I think this made Clark look really good just because, you know, they needed a lot of distraction help to kind of help Petey to win. So it made him kind of put him over as kind of somewhat of a heavy contender for the X Division title going into the future. But Ben, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought they did really well for the time that they were given. Clark in particular, that springboard elbow I thought was lovely. The reverse fall away pump handle slammy it as well. That was a great little move. The destroyer always looks fab. I like the fact as well that they built Clark up to the point in the match where Williams needed all of Team Canada to beat him. So I went 2 stars as well.
Gotcha. Lewis, what did you think of this one?
I agree 100%. Clark came out looking amazing, even in a loss here, because of how much outside help Team Canada gave Petey here. I think Petey by himself looked pretty good, even having to use the outside help from Team Canada. Petey still looked like a strong champion here, in my opinion. The Canadian Destroyer is always just a beautiful thing to see. I would like to see, like, maybe where was Bats here? Like, I know I prefer Clark being the solo guy, and I've been saying in the past, I would really like to see how Clark can just do away from Bats, but they are a tag team right now, so Bats should have been there to try to help with the Team Canada stuff. But that's my only critique, if anything, is I love seeing Clark solo, but we still have him as a tag team with Bats, so Bats should have been there to help with Canada.
Bats was busy getting 3LK supply, so that's where he was.
Yeah, I was going to say, knowing that he was his tag team partner, you would have. I mean, he still would have been outnumbered, so it would have. Bad for Clark, anyways. But it would have been
enough. And again, this is where I want to see Clark as a solo guy, but the storyline part of me wants to know why Bats wasn't there for Clark.
Yeah, I gotcha. I went 2 stars on it as well. I thought it was a really good match to open this show, and you know, kind of a ray of sunshine for how crappy the last episode was. So, but after this, we go and we get a AJ Styles highlight package, just kind of showing all the stuff that he had done throughout the first 2 years of TNA, just kind of all the crazy moves that he can pull out, and some of the highlights from the good matches he's had throughout the 2 years. And then we get a hype for the Best of the Heavyweights pay-per-view that came on the week after this episode of Impact. We hadn't really mentioned it, but these three episodes were followed by Best of the Tag Teams. Then it was Best of the X Division. Then it was this week is Best of the Heavyweights. So they're kind of getting rid of their last few weekly pay-per-views out of the gate right here. So they'll be completely gone by this time next week. But our next match is 3 Live Crew, comprised of Truth and Conan. And they're taking on Mike Hannigan and Marcus Dillon. I didn't know which one was which, so at first I said Blonde Jobber is great value Steve Corino. But I figured out that was eventually Hannigan. Hannigan was the guy with blonde hair. The only move that those two guys get in the entire match is Hannigan pokes, I think he pokes Truth in the eye, and he gets the tag to Dillon. And I asked the question of, is there anybody more worthless than Conan? Because at one point he's doing a move to, I think it's Hannigan, and Hannigan basically does the move to himself. The only good part of this match is Conan takes almost the entire match to break out the Rolling Thunder, but he hits it at the very end. So, Jake, what'd you think of this 3LK match?
Yeah, it was it's a squash, like you said. Our boy Hannigan and Dylan didn't get anything. Truth had this like jersey with four numbers on it, which is something I don't know if I've ever seen before. So that was kind of interesting. Basically, all my notes are things that don't really have to do much with the match because the match was extremely forgettable. But we had our Jeff Hardy. I'm sure Sean would love this Jeff Hardy cosplayer. Great value, Jeff Hardy in the crowd. He was hyped up for Conan's entrance, obviously, because they cut to him and he was excited. We at least did not get BG because he's out because his house got wrecked by the hurricane. So he's busy, making repairs. So he couldn't show up. And then finally we had Hannigan botch when Conan throws him out the ring. He's like almost Hannigan was a goober in this match. He was doing like the Frankie Capone. He was just like, anytime he get hit, he was like way overselling, like, all jittery, and like he gets thrown to the ropes and he's almost trying to sell it too much, and then he doesn't make it over the ropes, so he just rolls out. he was rough. I want a star on it because Truth does look good, and we at least were not subjected to BG in this match, only Conan, so that gets it some bonus points for me.
I gotcha. Ben, what'd you think of this one?
I've now got this image of like BG James turning into a handyman and doing some sort of reality show. Thanks for that.
Phenomenalize.
So I have four other notes. So if you don't mind, I'll just read them. I'll just read them verbatim.
Do it.
Limb work and rolling clotheslines from Conan. Brackets. I'm as shocked as you. Truth looks great. Truth wins with the lie detector. In brackets, pedigree. Not much to this. 0.75 stars. There you go.
Gotcha. Lewis, what do you think?
I'll also read my notes verbatim here. Match 2, 3LK, 1 star.
Well, I gotcha.
Lewis said he does not want to speak on this.
I went with Ben. I went 0.75 stars just because Conan makes me want to puke every time I see him on the screen with how terrible he is. So
I think the only reason I gave it 1 star was because I think is this the first time he did the lie detector truth? I think it is.
First time I've seen it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is, and I think that's why I gave it 1 star for Truth breaking out the new finisher.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, it might have been the first time, I'm not completely sure, but yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I just, you know, it was a 3LK match, it involved Conan, so I just can't give it 1 star. It's not a but after this, we get a Jarrett package, kind of showing his exploits and all that he had done throughout the history of TNA to this point. And that's followed by another Jarrett promo. I pointed out the great value Jeff Hardy in the crowd at this point. So you mentioned him in the last match, Jake, but I saw him at this point. But Jarrett is tired of waiting, and he wants to know who his next challenger is going to be. Says he'll say it again, that he'll take on anyone, even an outsider. So that's up to about seven or eight. Monty then comes out, and he actually does the down with the sickness sound. He does the wah thing. So I thought that was cool. And he
DMCA strike.
He welcomes Jarrett to the Serengeti. Says they're in the Serengeti, so he welcomes Jarrett there. He tells him not to worry about anyone other than him. While doing each of their individual taunts, and he actually says that Abyss is constipated, but he does the little like hand gesture that Jeff does, and forget who else he mentioned. He mentioned Abyss, and Who else did he make fun of?
Who was Raven. The third? Was Raven? Yeah,
Raven. Yeah, yeah, Raven. Yeah. He does. He did the Raven pose too.
Oh shit, that was great.
Yeah. That's who he was mentioning. He did the Raven pose. He kind of did the thing that Babis does with the chains, and then he did the Jeff little hand motion that he does when he does his little dance after the ring. But he's about to say that he's 1 pounce away from taking the title, but Jarrett kind of interrupts him and calls him, you guessed it, a AA ball player. he then says he is not worth enough to challenge the King of the Mountain and slaps him. And then we finally get our Monty Jarrett brawl that we've kind of been waiting for. Anytime they get face to face, they just kind of stand there and they don't ever actually fight. But yeah, they actually get into a little bit of a brawl here before we get separated by security. And Dusty Rhodes, for some fucking reason, comes out at this point because you know he just has to be on screen. And then we go to break. Jake, what'd you think of this little promo?
Yeah, I thought it was good 100% because of Monty. He like carried it with his energy because you're thinking at first, oh, here we go, another kind of run-of-the-mill Jeff Jarrett promo. But then Monty comes out, he does his impressions and stuff, and he just has a really awesome energy to him. I definitely think, like, I know in the last episode, because it was so heavily edited, that we had fake crowd noise, but I thought in this one you wouldn't. But to me, it definitely sounded fake because it's like when Monty's doing his impressions and stuff, the crowd doesn't really ebb and flow with him or react to like specific things. It's just like this steady white noise of the crowd. So it's odd to me because it definitely seemed fake to me. I don't know if y'all heard the same thing, but it's just weird to me because he's like, he kind of has a cadence to the way he does his promo, and you would think the crowd would kind of be reacting to it, and they don't. That was weird. But yeah, I enjoyed it 100% because of him, and getting hit to see him finally hit Jeff Jarrett was good. They've kind of built it up pretty well. And I think they've had a pretty good steady progression with Monty. And I think he definitely feels like he's in the right spot being at the top of the card now.
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely seems to really kind of be breaking out, and hopefully he'll get the title shot coming up. But Lewis, what'd you think of this one?
Yeah, Monty was hilarious. He was great. My favorite part of it was he cracked Jarrett so early, got Jarrett laughing. Jarrett didn't even try to keep a straight face. Like Monty got him laughing, and it was great. I do love that they finally put hands on each other and brawled. And I'm so happy that we now get Monty Brown as the number one contender, and this will surely lead to a Monty Brown-Jeff Jarrett match. I'm so happy for this. Can you tell I'm being sarcastic? Because we don't actually get that. Because Dusty Rhodes is so good at booking. Yeah, it was a great promo, which should have led to a great match, which we just don't get.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Ben, what do you think?
Great promo, 100% carried by our boy Monty. He was absolutely brilliant in this. Like Jake said, yeah, the white noise, the piping crowd was very distracting because during some of those impressions, that crowd's got to be cracking up at some point and we never hear it or see it. I'm disappointed that you mentioned the double A line, Logan, because that was going to be my guest Jeopardy question for you all, but you know, because he never says it that often, does Double J? So you've got to, you know, that was going to be a really toughie. But yeah, I think one of the highlights of these shows for us has been witnessing Monty going from like mid card, upper mid card, now cracking that main event and deserving to be there.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. It would have been nice to do the little Jeopardy sound there for your guest Jeopardy question there. But yeah, he has mentioned up. He calls him a jock and kind of a wannabe jock because he failed as a player. So
I can't do Alex Trebek as well as Will Ferrell, I'm afraid. it's probably not best that I didn't.
yeah, I gotcha. But we come back from commercial and Dusty is outside of the ring leading a Hardy chant. And Larry's kind of there skulking, kind of pissed off that Dusty's even in the arena. Larry says Dusty can't hijack the show. Dusty then says the championship committee's got everything messed up and that Hardy deserves the next shot. You know, he deserves this rematch because of how the match kind of ended. Larry says he's going to bring another member of the committee next week to set Dusty straight, and Dusty automatically assumes that it's going to be Terry Funk, and he calls, "That's so good, Terry Funk, baby!" But yeah, Dusty really, really showing out and stealing some screen time for some of these guys that kind of deserve it. We'll go on into our next match, and it is Frankie Capone, who Jake actually mentioned earlier, and he's facing Abyss this time. Capone looked like great value Perry Saturn when Perry Saturn was kind of losing his mind in WWE and wearing all the big hats and the crazy jackets and stuff like that. So Capone had to kind of have a big blue hat on and a blue vest. Capone actually jumps at the bell and gets a few shots in, but Abyss then absolutely wrecks him with a big clothesline, the shock treatment, and then he hits the black hole slam for the win. Ben, what did you think of this squash?
Can I just rewind back to the dusty bit first? Did anybody get the same vibe as me? It was basically two old boys at the retirement home arguing over the last bread roll for their tomato soup. That's what I thought it was.
Playing dominoes.
That's no good, Terry Funk. You took my domino.
Domino, mother. No, I'm not going to do it. Frankie Capone, I've got a great value for him, but I'm going to save that for my awards. This was a perfectly fine squash. Great to the shock treatment because we didn't see that in the first of his squash. I went 1 star for it.
Gotcha. Jake, what did you think?
Yeah, I went 1 star. I was excited to see Frankie return because he was a highlight for many reasons when I saw him first, and he did not disappoint here. For Abyss, he was just like, all his selling, like he basically like convulses is his way of selling. So every time Abyss hits a move, he just lays on the mat and like gyrates and like flings his limbs around. Yeah, Frankie's real extra, and I kind of like it as a job. Like he at least has personality. But yeah, Abyss looked good. I'm interested to see where Abyss goes now that, you know, Goldilocks is going to be gone. And, you know, I'm interested to see what they do with him now that he's past that saga.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm very interested to see where Abyss goes from here. But Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, same thing. Of all the jobbers, Frankie is my favorite. And then it is good to see Abyss kind of get these two solo wins back to back. Just get some TV time as his solo monster character again. And I'm interested to see where he goes from here because his name's been thrown in by Monty and others as being one of the guys in line for like a number one contendership potentially. So it's good to see that they're feeding him these jobbers, giving him some TV time to show out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really interested to see where Abyss goes from here. Cause he'll grow to be one of the major highlights of this promotion going forward. But it's good to see him kind of break out on his own after kind of being with Shelley and Goldie for the last few months. But after this, we go to a package kind of showing what happened with the tag titles at the last weekly pay-per-view where Skipper and Harris ended up taking on the Naturals and actually winning the tag team titles. And then that leads straight into our main event, which is the tag title match between Harris and Skipper, and they're taking on their two individual partners, which is Christopher Daniels and James Storm. The first note I made, I really don't like that the teams kind of came out the way that they did, because Harris and Storm came out as AMW, and then Skipper and Daniels came out as XXX. I wish they had kind of come out as the teams that they're supposed to be on. That kind of bothered me. But Skipper and Storm start things. Storm gets thrown over the top rope, but skins the cat and comes back and hits Primetime with some heavy strikes. Skipper then tags in Harris, but Storm immediately tags Daniels so he doesn't have to fight his partner. Harris and Daniels lock up with Harris getting the advantage when he catches Daniels on a charge and hits a sit-out powerbomb. Daniels is then able to duck a charge and hit a pretty sweet dropkick. After some heavy strikes, Daniels tags in Storm to go for a double team, but Storm won't do it because he doesn't want to attack Harris. Skipper then tags himself in and gives it to Storm. Storm is able to grab a front face lock and tries to kind of get Daniels to do the same thing and attack his partner. Skipper then kind of reverses it into a Northern Light suplex because of Daniels was stalling. We then go to commercial and come back, and Skipper kind of has an abdominal stretch on Storm. Storm nails a pretty sweet inverted suplex. Both men get the tag, and Harris kind of takes it to Daniels. Daniels is then able to reverse a move and hit a twisting sit-out powerbomb. Daniels then tags in Storm, and Storm pushes Harris into Skipper, so it kind of makes Skipper the legal man because they hit each other. Storm then gets into a striking contest with Skipper and wins with a kick straight to the head. Storms then almost hits Harris, which brings Daniels in, and kind of all four men kind of brawl for a little bit. Harris actually hits the catatonic on Daniels, but Skipper brings a chair in and tries to hit Storm with it. Harris kind of yanks the chair away from Skipper, and they kind of get into a shoving match, which leads to Harris kind of clotheslining him and kind of turning on him. Daniels then hits kind of a Uranagi type move, and then he hits the best moonsault ever, but they only gets two. Daniels then throws Harris outside, and his head kind of hits the guardrail with a nasty thud. I thought that was pretty gross looking. And then Daniels grabs the chair, and Skipper thinks that Daniels is coming for him with it. And then they kind of yell at each other, and out of nowhere, Storm hits the last call super kick on Skipper and pins him for the win. So we have new tag team champions in Christopher Daniels and James Storm. I'll go to Lewis. What did you think of this main event?
I thought this was a fantastic match and a fantastic main event. There was great ring psychology going on. There was great back and forth with these two teams and finding unique ways of not getting the tag team partners, the normal tag team partners, to fight each other in the match. I gave it 3.75 stars because I think it was as perfect of a tag team match as you can get, considering the circumstances here and like the weirdness of the teams. If it had been going forward, to see this get built some more is going to be fantastic. I love to see the title change off of this weird interaction between Daniels and Skipper with the steel chair. Again, going back to the promo at the beginning of the show, it would have been better to see some tease of kind of tension between the teams, because that would have made more sense as to why Skipper and Daniels would have that weirdness with the steel chair later. Because right now, nothing so far in the match has led us to believe that Skipper would believe Daniels is about to hit him with the chair. So to get a tease earlier would have been nice for that. But a fantastic match for everyone involved. Fantastic decision to have the belt switch to the other teammates to kind of build this tension between all four of them. I thought it was great.
Gotcha. What would you give it score rating-wise?
3.75 stars.
Gotcha. Ben, what did you think of this one?
I won't go as high as Lewis did, but I did like the whole thing of, like, it was a tag match that was masquerading as two singles matches. Mm-hmm. You know, we never at any stage got the actual proper part is wrestling each other. It was, yeah. So the things like the, you know, so when Storm pushes Harris into the tag to Skipper, I really liked all that stuff. I went 3 stars on it. It was a good match, but I think, like I alluded to at the beginning of the Zbyszko interview, this solves nothing. It's we're still where we were. We're in this infinity loop, and we're not going round. But
I got you.
Some of the moves, particularly like you say, like that catatonic was great. The inverted suplex was great as well. I really liked Daniels hitting the rock bottom into the BME. I went 3 stars. Really didn't like the match, but we're still not solving anything.
Yeah, I got you. Jake, what'd you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty much a Ben. I went 3 on it. I did think it was funny that they said at the top of the show that this match is going to have a 30-minute special time limit, but then we know it can't go that long because there's like 10 minutes left for the show. So it's kind of funny that they went through all this trouble of telling us there's a 30-minute limit. But yeah, it almost kind of ended up working like a mixed tag match in a way, like where, like, you know, where you have men and women, but they can only be men and only be women. It was kind of like that, but with the tag partner. So anytime they see their partner, they have to like tag out. And so they worked it pretty well, and I think they did a good job of not letting that sort of aspect of it slow down the match or hinder it, because it still did build a good bit of momentum as it went on. I thought the whole finishing sequence got a little bit messy and kind of convoluted at the end, but I agree. I thought it was well done for what the storyline was. But like Ben said, I think it's kind of, and I'm gonna give the, you know, the benefit of the doubt and see how they play it out. But I just have like the question of where does it go? Like, because the way it's set up now, like Ben said, it would be sort of like, well, what are they going to do? Just keep swapping the titles back and forth? Because how else, according to Larry, unless somebody else changes this rule or something, it's just going to be them swapping it back and forth. And then where does it go? I'm not saying there's nowhere they could go with it that works, but I'm interested to see if they know, if they have a plan for this, or if it just kind of ends up turning into a big mess. But yeah, fun match, 3 stars.
Yeah, I went 3 stars as well. And I don't mind that they switched it to the other two teammates and everything, but I feel like they could have played it out a little bit longer. But Harris and Skipper are probably like the worst tag team champions of all time, because they had 2 matches and they lost both of them. So it kind of makes them look like giant losers. But yeah, I mean, I kind of hope this is one of those things that doesn't last too horribly long, but maybe we'll get a few more title switches between the two random teammates. But I went 3 stars as well on it. I thought it was a pretty strong way to end these episodes, for sure. Jake, I'll stick with you. What did you think of this episode, and what would you score it out of 10?
So I'm going to give this a 5. I think it was definitely a step up from the first two we watched, even though maybe if you go by like the star ratings of the matches of what we got, I don't know if this one, you know, maybe some of the other two are a little bit better, but this felt more like an actual show with maybe a little bit of stakes. Like, we get the tag team angle that we just talked about kind of acknowledge. You do, you get Monty going off on Jared and stuff. So you felt like things were maybe happening. It's not like they have to do a million angles a show. It's a very short show, but they at least gave us a couple things to feel like, you know, something's being built or there's things going on besides just kind of matches being thrown out. And I thought it helped a lot. So 5 out of 10, it was a pretty solid impact.
Gotcha. Ben, what'd you think?
4.5 out of 10 for me. Like Jake says, this was a show where things actually happened, and we don't need loads of things to happen. One or two will do. You know, we got a really good match at the end. We got the good X Division match at the beginning. The Monty Double J brawl was really good as well. I'm gonna turn a blind eye to the 3LK and Dusty stuff just because the other stuff pleased me that much.
Gotcha. Lewis, what'd you think?
Yeah, I went 6 out of 10 because I think it was above average of what we've been seeing for Impact TV shows. I thought we did get a couple squash matches and a 3LK match, but I think Clark and Petey and then this tag match at the end kind of helped carry the show above what a normal Impact is like. And then that Monty Jarrett showdown promo was very entertaining. Unlike most of the promos we've seen in TNA so far.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think the only real bad part of this episode is we didn't get any AJ, so that was kind of a misstep. I think they should have definitely gotten him in a match somewhere. But yeah, the main event was strong, and we finally got that kind of face-off kind of brawl, a little bit of a brawl from Monty and Jarrett. So I'll go with Jake. I think I'll go 5 out of 10 just because I think it was... It was strong at points, but it, you know, it has its 3LKs and its Dusty's still in there somewhere. So I'll go kind of down the middle of the road at 5. But we'll go into our awards. MVP, who'd you have, Lewis?
I have Storm and Daniels just for winning the tag titles.
Gotcha. Jake, who'd you have as your MVP?
I have AJ. To me, he's the highlight of all. I mean, anytime when he's featured a decent amount, to me, he usually ends up the MVP.
Gotcha. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, Ben, you're going with AJ as well.
How did you guess? He's my default answer, and that will be the same for a while.
Yeah, I went with Styles too, because I just kind of by default, I don't think anybody really super stood out to me, but he was good in that tag match, and he was good in the match with Shelley, so I'll give it to him this week.
Yeah. If there hadn't been a title change, I would have also gone with AJ.
I got you. The poo-poo diaper LVP award, Lewis, who'd you go with?
Again, Dusty. I'm so tired of seeing Dusty Rhodes' face on TV right now.
I got you. Jake, who'd you have as your LVP?
Conan.
Nice. Ben, who'd you have?
Dusty, he's just a pandering fool with honorable mention to Shane Douglas and his scrunched up shoulders.
By the way, what did Terry Funk do? Why is he a no good rotten whatever Dusty called him? Did Terry Funk do anything to irk Dusty Rhodes at some point?
I think they like hate each other like personally. I think they just never really liked each other for some reason. I don't know what the reason is, but okay. I think they kind of have a rivalry somewhere down the line, kind of personally, not even just in the business. But I just went with TNA as a company for the second episode we watched, kind of just being replays and kind of botchingly put together. So I just went with the whole company.
We're through the looking glass, people.
That second episode was just no good, and it's kind of crazy that they just had to throw something together like that. But I'll give it to Dusty if I have to actually give it to a person, just because he needs to get off my screen ASAP. Match of the night, Jake, who'd you go with?
It's weird because I think I rated the tag match we talked about the best, but I have AJ Shelley as the best. But I'll go with the tag. It's almost like a tie between those two, but I'll go with the tag from the last show.
Yeah, either of those are solid choices for sure. Ben, what'd you have?
I went with the tag title match as well, with an honorable mention to AJ Shelley.
Gotcha. Lewis, did you go with the tag match?
I did.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Yeah, I went with the tag match as well. Moment of the night, I kind of went with Jeff Jarrett and Monty finally getting physical with each other. Jake, what'd you go with?
Yep, same thing. And I specifically, when Monty cracks him, I thought was the key moment of that.
Yeah,
I gotcha. Lewis, what'd you go with?
Same thing. That promo and Jarrett cracking.
I got you. Ben, did you go the same?
3 for 3.
I got you. Yeah, that's what I went with for sure. Express Lane, Ben, who'd you have in your Express Lane this week?
So Express Lane, he's my default answer for my MVP. He's my default answer here, Mr. Styles. And I also went with Abyss because those two squashes were great. And either him or Monty, if they're on my screen squashing a bitch, like you say, I'm there.
Absolutely. Jake, who'd you have on your Express Lane?
Yeah, definitely Monty, AJ. To me, those are the guys that should be trying to build the company around, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I got you. Lewis, who'd you have in your Express Lane?
I went with Abyss because of his two squash wins and finally getting to see him in the title picture as opposed to being a lackey.
Gotcha. Yeah, I went with Abyss and Monty as well. Abyss really impressive in those two squashes. And yeah, kind of pushing him into the main event picture is a good thing to see. And Monty's obviously finally looking like he's may get his shot at Jarrett. But Exit Lane, I just went with Dusty and Russo just because in their little screen time, they just annoyed me and took up valuable time that could have gone to somebody else. But Jake, who'd you go with your Exit Lane?
I have Jeff Hammond. And also, just the idea of like crappy audio and butchered episodes. So kind of what you were talking about. Watching things that we already watched and it not being told to us that it's
the whole second episode is in the Exit Lane.
Yeah.
Ben, what'd you have?
So the real answer, sadly, is Goldie. The answer. The people it should have been is Dusty fucking Rhodes and anybody connected to the championship committee. If I ever have to hear them again, it's a moment too soon.
I got you. Lewis, who'd you have in your exit lane?
Yeah, that's exactly what I had on my notes, was the championship committee. It's just, it's a worthless storyline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, nobody threw an exit lane to the Yu-Gi-Oh card shirt. I think that needs to.
Oh, that should be the express lane. What the fuck? Or Yu-Gi-Oh.
How dare you, sir?
It needs to go modest to the top, that shirt.
Jeff Hardy looks like a Yu-Gi-Oh character, so.
All right. Well, and our last award is going to be the Great Value Award. Ben, who'd you go with your Great Value?
So my Great Value for the night was Frankie Capone, and I had him as either Great Value Blue Meanie or Great Value Papa Smith. All he needed was the beard and to be painted up.
good one for sure. Jake, who'd you have as your Great Value?
Well, before I'll get into it, I think we did have a Don West freak out on this one during that last tag match with the, when he could not get over how weird it was that the two teams like had to be with them. Yes. Like he could not get over it. He was just like, this is so bizarre. It's so weird. And like, even by the end of the match, he could not cope with the fact that these two teams got mixed together. but anyway, my Great Value is going to be a Great Value Jeff Hardy in the crowd. Cosplayer.
Gotcha. Lewis, who'd you have as your Great Value?
Yeah, I went with Douglas's backstage interviews with his Great Value Randy Savage impersonation.
Yeah. I had it as the Don West brain aneurysm moment rather than heart attack, where Don realized at the end, oh yeah, these two mismatched partners, it's just a different two this now. Oh, that's what's happening.
It's so weird. It's so bizarre. I can't get over it.
Crazy.
It's crazy, Mike.
But my Great Value Award was Vordell Walker's Great Value, comma, the Supreme Fighting Machine. I had to give it to that guy. So, that'll finish up our show tonight. I'll go around for plugs now. Jake, what do you have to plug?
I'll go ahead and plug the newest episode of PTB NXT that just came out. We continue through the summer of 2014 in NXT. Some big debuts. We covered the debut of Becky Lynch and how absurd that is considering where her career would go, and many other fun things. So check that out. It will be right here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed.
I got you. If Vordell Walker's not one of the name generators, I'm going to be mad. Ben, what do you have to plug?
Okay, we recorded the newest episode of Chicken Salad last week. It's the first one with Sean, Logan, and our special guest, Mr. Rory McNamara. We reviewed Royal Rumble 2006.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
We had a great time.
Yeah, it was probably a few shit takes in there, according to everybody else, but we had a fun time with it. And I was glad Rory got to join us. It was cool having a guest on there. Lewis, where can people find you on social media and all that?
On Twitter, you can find me at Lewis Maynard, Instagram at Lewis_Maynard. And I'll plug Pluto TV has the rights to all of the seasons of Yu-Gi-Oh! So if you want to go on there and watch classic anime... you can find that on Pluto TV.
Lewis is pining for a Ginny position. Heard about Pluto, so Ginny, get him on there.
Yep.
I think on Monday we're going to record the first part of the next episode of NWA Crock and Roll. Looking forward to being on there with Sean and Dr. G and Callum. Kind of an era that I don't know too much about, and those guys are kind of experts, so it's kind of be a little bit crazy to see what our differing opinions will be on it. But then a little bit further down in the month, I'm going to be on Blockbuster Rewind with those guys, and we're going to be looking at the Shrek series, so I'm looking forward to looking at that one. That's pretty much it for me. thank you, as always, to all the listeners of our show. We love your continued support, and we'll see you next time.
Beat them aside now.